When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Lady Sansa, I offer my services once again. I will shield your back and keep your counsel and give my life for yours if need be. I swear it by the old gods and the new.
And I vow that you shall always have a place by my hearth. And
meat and mead at my table.
Meat and mead at my table. And I pledge to ask no service of you that might bring you dishonor. I swear it by the old gods and the new.
Arise.
Hey, Throners, welcome to our podcast. I'm Mr. Blog.
And I'm Grace.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 16.
And in this episode, we're covering Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 1, The Red Woman.
Indeed, the season premiere of Season 6. Man, I was so excited to have it back. What about you?
I knew it. Yes, I was so excited. I've been looking forward to it for months, and it did not disappoint me anyway.
Yeah, no
Maybe
kidding.
Not everyone's on the same page, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so, you know, thank you guys for tuning in and listening to us. I guess tuning in, that doesn't really happen anymore, does it? But downloading us and giving us a listen. For those of you who are new to Game of Microphones, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Eric, but also more commonly known on the interwebs as Mr. Blog. I will be your host for the next 10 episodes, and we will have a rotating cast of co-hosts. And this week, I am joined with my co-host from Under the Comic Covers, my normal weekly podcast about comic books, Grace. Grace, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. How are you doing?
I am doing very well and very excited to talk about Game of Thrones. I mean,
indeed,
it's been 42 long weeks. Actually, I think only 41 because I think there was a Memorial Day time off or something like that. But 41 long weeks without Game of Thrones. We did do our season 5 recap. So those of you who are just now listening to us, you can go back and listen to that. We also have season 5 that we did cover. You can go back and listen to that as well as individual issues for seasons 2, 3, and 4. We don't have anything for season 1. But God, I'm really, really looking forward to this season of Game of Thrones and, of course, Game of Microphones as well. What are your initial thoughts, just out of the gate, about this episode?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a strong episode, especially for season premiere. I think they tend to be slow. You're doing a lot of catch up. But with this one, I felt like they just kind of dumped you right back in there. We touched base with most of the storylines that they left off last season. And I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was very strong.
Yeah, I think we actually touched base with everybody that had a significant role in the last season. Mm-hmm. In this episode, you know, usually I think most seasons, it takes about 2 episodes to kind of cover all that ground of catching up with everyone. Yeah. And I do believe In the next episode, we're going to we'll talk about this more in next week on Game of Thrones. But I think we're going to get some of those characters that we didn't see at all in season five that are finally going to be returning again. So I'm really excited. And I did think this episode did a great job of how do I put this? This episode did not feel confusing to me. You know, with the cast of characters as huge as this show has, let's face it, sometimes it can be a little difficult to keep track of everything that's going on. But this time around, I felt like I got it all. I don't know what was different about it or what the deal was. Maybe that they weren't jumping around as much as they sometimes do. They kind of gave you like this character, then this block of this character. You know, it seemed to follow a certain progression that made a lot of sense. Now, I may have a few quibbles about maybe some continuity or some timing issues about when things happen or how long of a time was it between the end of season five and this. You know, for instance, at Winterfell, it was immediate, right? Like right after Jon Snow gets stabbed, boom, that picks up right away.
Well, you meant at the wall, but also at Winterfell.
At the wall, yeah, sorry. And at Winterfell, yeah, it seemed like that was pretty quick as well.
Yeah.
Right after all that happened. But then you have maybe a little bit of time occurred between Arya or
King's Landing.
King's Landing.
Like some time went by with Cersei.
Well, also, that's a pretty long boat ride from Dorne to King's Landing. So that seemed to happen pretty quick. But regardless, nitpicking, why don't we go ahead and get into our top five highlights of Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 1, The Red Woman.
Well, my number five, I just put the chilling reveal of the still dead Jon Snow.
Ooh.
I love how they came in with the camera. We kind of got a different angle than what we're used to seeing of the wall, and to see Jon's body all alone. He's totally bled out and deader than dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
It's like the big question everyone was asking, is Jon Snow dead? Is Jon Snow dead? Well, yeah, he's dead. He's very dead. And he looks so much more dead this episode than he did last time.
Yeah, blue skin tends to give you that impression.
Yeah. But I loved it. Maybe mainly for the camera angle coming in and then Ghost in the background, just howling. I thought it was such a lonely scene, and it just kind of was perfect for, you know, just for the scene, and John just laying there alone with no friends at that moment.
So one thing in that, when Davos finally sees the body and he goes over there and he gets Dolorous Ed and all his buddies to lift him up, one thing did you notice that he kind of looked at the ground, at the bloodstains on the snow?
Yeah.
Now, what I realized, which I might be totally reading into this, I don't know, but it seemed to me that Davos was thinking he was not stabbed in the back. If you notice where the blood was, you know, he was lying back down and there was no blood directly on his back. I have a feeling that to him meant like, wow, he was stabbed head on.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah. Well, he was, figuring it out and looking at the traitor sign. And
Yeah. Precisely. Yeah, so that really hit me, the way Davos looked at that and was like, oh, geez. And I got to say it. I love the fact that Davos is now on that side of things.
Yeah.
You know, he's with Dolorous Ed and then the unnamed Jon Snow supporters, A, B, C, and D, whoever they are. Which seems to be a pretty small group. And, you know, and I loved Alistair Thorne just stating, Jon Snow is dead. You know, unequivocally, Jon Snow is dead. And it was like, all right, well, there you have it, folks. You know, we all wanted to know the fate of Jon Snow.
Now we know.
He is not yet burned at the pyre. He is not yet buried.
Right.
So
right.
In this world of magic and fantasy, it's still possible he can come back in one way or another. And Indeed. We all assumed it would be from the Red Woman, but that has not yet happened. Who knows if it will? We don't know yet. But Jon is definitely dead. And Ghost, I loved seeing him again and him having a bit of a role in this. I really dug the whole thing with Davos and Ed, where he asks him, you know, Do you know the wolf? Are you okay with the wolf? You know,
yeah.
Does he know you? I think that's what he is. Does he know you?
Yes,
he does. Like, oh, thank goodness. Imagine how horrifying that would be.
Well, it's like, we need all the help we can get or something like that, you know?
Yeah, precisely. So who do you think Ed was going after? You know, so Ed leaves and everybody's kind of like getting a siege mentality in the thing there.
Yeah, I assume that the wildlings.
That's what I'm thinking as well. I'm thinking he's going straight to Tormund Giant's Bane. And when Tormund finds out that the Night's Watch killed Jon Snow, oh my goodness, there's going to be some badass rage, because I love me some Tormund rage.
Oh, yeah. Fiery redhead rage.
Oh, he's the best. I love that
kissed
dude.
Kissed with fire, just like... Oh my gosh, Ygritte.
Ygritte, that's right. Rest in peace. And Ollie, little Ollie, he grew up a few inches.
He's grown. I actually laughed out loud when they showed him, because I was like, whoa, puberty has come.
Well, it's like the Bran syndrome, right? I mean, Bran at this point has to shave. I think he's smoking. he's going to show up next week. He's going to be like, hey, how you doing, Hodor? You know, definitely a bit of an issue with casting younger actors, you know.
Sure.
They really got lucky with Maisie Williams in that she is a very small young woman, so that kind of works out. Now Sansa, for the life of me, I can't remember her name, right? Sophie Turner. She's like 5'10" or 5'11". She's taller than almost everybody in the cast. So it's kind of funny, but so that was a great number 5, Jon Snow. The dead body of Jon Snow. My number 5, I'm going a little bit more of a general concept on this one. And what I felt was the overriding theme of this episode, which I thought was purpose. And it seemed to me that a lot of people were either discovering or losing their purpose, or maybe rediscovering a purpose. But my favorite example of this is, of course, Brienne. I'll talk a lot about that more later. But Brienne found her purpose again. And it's what she's been searching for how long now? You know, she's finally able to care for
a couple seasons.
For a few seasons at least. But she's finally able to care for one of Lady Stark's daughters. And now she is in her protection. And that is all she's been trying to do. Melisandre, her purpose, really thrown into question right now.
Sure.
You know, she sees the flames, but what is she getting out of there? Arya, we didn't know where she was going to leave off. Now we begin to maybe see what her purpose is as well. So I really felt that it was a really neat thing that they're doing with this one, where, you know, the last season ended off in a very unusual way for Game of Thrones. They usually don't end it off in an actual, a genuine cliffhanger. Usually you have episode 9 where the big event happens, and then episode 10 to kind of process everything. It was all mixed up last season. Season 8 was the huge episode. Season 9 happened. But then with 10, you got Sansa and Theon jumping off a wall. We didn't know what happened with them. Of course, Jon Snow dying and Arya going blind. So there were all these little moments of, well, what the fuck? You know, what's going to happen? What's going on? Now, I will say, at least we know who was stabbed. We at least know who was potentially dead. We just didn't know what the outcome of that was going to be with Jon. I feel like this episode really propelled everybody's story in a way that, oddly enough, I felt more optimistic in this one than I have felt in quite a while. I mean, there's a lot of bad juju going on, always.
With all the self-doubt going on, you felt optimistic, huh?
Oddly enough, yes. I really did. And that may have a lot to do with the Brienne Sansa thing that really
did
bolster me in many, many ways. If there was any hopeful, wonderful moments for me in this episode, it was definitely that. But I think there were even some other very nice, hopeful moments as well. Maybe I'm just being overly optimistic. I don't know. So my number 5, purpose. What's your number 4?
Well, my number 4, which you touched on, is Arya the Beggar.
Nice.
I love that we touched base with her, and at the end of season 5, you don't really know what's going on. A lot of people think she's being punished, and you know, when you see her begging there on the steps all alone, you think, well, she's been cast out of the House of Black and White. She just seems very, very much alone and dirty and you know, just downtrodden. Well, Then the waif, who's been in a mm-hmm. thorn in her side since the beginning, shows up and gives her a stick and beats the tar out of her. But then you're thinking, well, training cannot be over.
Nope.
If she is there. And she said, see you tomorrow. So that lets us know that she has not been abandoned. We don't know exactly what's going on, but she's still learning, and that's hopeful. Like that, I think that was a bit of hope, maybe.
Well, exactly. And I think that was really cool because even before the waif shows up, you begin to realize, oh, Arya's hearing is now, she's beginning to use her other senses a little bit right. more strongly. She's able to start hearing these conversations. She's listening in. And I think that is going to be the whole point of this training by the waif. I mean, this is very, you know, daredevil of her, you know, in terms of use your other senses to know where, even very Star Wars.
Use the force.
Exactly. Just to, and I thought that was great. And I loved it. And honestly, yeah, hopeful. I felt very hopeful about that.
No, I agree. I agree. And I also, even though it wasn't a great fight because Arya doesn't know what she's doing yet.
No, it was a terrible fight.
Hopefully she will learn. But there's something about like the fighting sticks that I really like seeing those fight scenes. So I'm hoping for some really good ones.
Even the way that it ended with the waif saying, see you tomorrow, that she's completely behind Arya and she doesn't even know it. You know, I thought that was just great. I thought it was dealt with very well. And again, it does show a purpose behind why. I mean, as a reminder, she was blinded because she did not do what she was supposed to do and kill the merchant or the insurance guy, whatever that jackass was. But instead, she killed Meryn Trant, not what she was supposed to be doing. So this is just her punishment. But her punishment, I think, is part of her training.
Within the definition of punishment, there is supposed to be learning involved. I do like that. I like that. And I thought, not to step out of the little, moment there, but I love the contacts. I thought they looked really amazing.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And she cannot see, Maisie Williams cannot see a thing through those. So, she's getting to experience what it's like to be blind too.
You think so? You think she actually can't see through those?
Oh, I know she can't.
Oh.
I mean.
Oh, that's right. Because you wore those this Halloween.
I mean, I've been in some zombie contacts.
Oh, that's contacts, right.
And you cannot see through those. And hers look even like more glazed over than some of the. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm certain she's blind with those. But which is cool.
Now that you mentioned that, I have to throw it out. For those of you who are listening who don't know, Grace was a zombie extra for a number of episodes on The Walking Dead. So you threw it out there. I had to, let people know what the hell you're talking about. My number four.
Yep. Okay.
Ilaria Sand and the coup. Now, I wanted to get this out of the way kind of quickly because I think you and I both agree this show has handled the entire Dorne storyline really poorly.
Poorly. 7 times in the last episode.
Yeah, exactly. I still think they've handled it poorly, but now I feel there's at least a little bow and a ribbon on everything that it's like, okay, this is what it's doing now. Like, okay, yes. Now, I was most sad to see Arya Hota go because I like that dude. It sucked that Nim, I believe is her name, just stabs him right in the back. Boom, that's it. Poor Duran, stabbed in the heart. At least he has a few moments to spit out a little bit of stuff. But he at least gets a couple of lines.
Weren't talking about the blood?
No, not about the blood, but here's something that, we can talk about what bugs me on all these things completely, but as far as the Dorne storyline. Okay. So Ilaria is all pissed off about Elia. Okay. You can be pissed off about Elia and maybe Duran not doing anything about that. You cannot blame him for not going to war because of Oberyn, because everything that Oberyn volunteered to be Tyrion's champion. And if he didn't have the hubris and his cockiness, he could have beaten the mountain handily, but he was being cocky. So
exactly.
You can't go to war for that.
And she was there. So she knows that.
Exactly. So that bugs the hell out of me, because like, no, that you just killed a man for obviously his people don't care about him, because all the other guards stand by. They're like, meh, you know, go ahead, kill him. We don't care. I did love the line of, you know, Dorne will never be ruled by weak men again, especially because in a show that has been slammed so hard for being misogynistic and these kinds of things. Well, this is a straight up matriarchy at this point. So that's pretty cool. That's badass. I'm down with that.
Yeah. Which fits actually with
it fits with Dorne. It really does. Dorne. Now, of course, then we got Trystane getting a spear through the head.
That was, I guess he shouldn't have put his back.
I know.
Back to someone with a spear, but I still didn't expect it.
I didn't expect it either.
I still did not expect it.
No, neither did I. I thought there was going to be a whip fight in this weird small... I thought that was kind of weird to like have a whip fight in such a small area. Like, how the hell is that going
to
work?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, that was good to challenge her, because, you know, how good can like a bullwhip be in that small of an area?
That's what I thought too. But I was surprised to suddenly see that spear come through his face. Like, holy shit. Now, here's a bigger question I have for you. Now, obviously, Trystane, we know, is on the ship. So obviously they put Myrcella's body and Jaime on the little dinghy. I do have to question, where the hell is Bronn? He was with him. Didn't see him anywhere. But here's my bigger question. How did Obara and, what's the other ones?
Tyene. Nymeria?
No, Nymeria. Nym is with, that's the cute one that likes to get naked. I think that's the one that was with Ilaria. Or do I have them confused?
I'm not sure.
Well, two of the Sand Snakes who killed Trystane, the last time I recall, they were on the pier with Ilaria and Nym. They weren't on that boat. How the hell did they get on that boat? I may be wrong.
I don't think was Trystane on that boat?
Trystane was on the boat because he was supposed to go with Myrcella and Jaime to King's Landing. That was part of the deal.
Oh, okay. I think that was lost on me. I thought everybody was in Dorne.
No, they were on the boat. That's where he was killed. You know, he was sitting there painting the little like dead eyes.
Oh, see, that makes more sense, because they were for Myrcella.
They were for Myrcella. Now they're going to be for him, I guess.
The creepiest. Well, but they don't match.
Of course, why are you then painting those when she's already gone? Which also didn't make any sense. But I got to say, that bugged me a little bit, where I'm just like, oh, wait, how the hell did they get on the boat? They were on the pier. I mean, Ilaria is the one that gave Myrcella the kiss of death. They were all there together. Suddenly they're on the boat. So
maybe they paddled real quickly. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Swam out there. Wait. We want to come too. We want to see King's Landing.
It's been a while since I'd seen the finale of season 5, so I did not even catch that.
They may have been on the boat the whole time. I may be wrong, but that just kind of stuck out to me. Like, wait, how did they get there? This doesn't make any sense. Regardless, my number 4 was the whole coup, because now all the Dornish men, they're gone. So now it's all Ilaria and the 3 Sand Snakes. I don't know. Are they going to drop Dorne altogether? Are they now going to go to war? And then it kind of got me thinking, like, oh my God. So has the Battle of the 5 Kings now become the Battle of 5 Queens? You know, Margaery, Cersei, Ilaria, Dany. I feel like there's another female leadership thing going on there. Sansa, of course, who probably has a bit of a claim. And she is needed in Winterfell as far as the North is concerned. So, I don't know.
You have a point there.
That's my number 4. Ilaria Sand and the coup. What's your number 3?
Oh, very good. Okay, my number 3 is Sir Alistair Thorne.
Nice.
I loved the scene where he just flat out said that he killed Jon.
Yeah, I like that too.
You know, it was unexpected, but hell, why not? He's a smart guy in I hate him. I've hated him so much that sometimes I forget that, you know, he does have some brains. And I think he really, really showed that, and how he knows people, and he knows how to control people, and he knows what people need to hear. He knew, you know, he stated his case, and I thought he stated it very well, in the right way to get men to follow him and to kind of, you know, understand him. You know, he You know, he said that, you know, that John was a threat to the Night's Watch as a whole, and that he was protecting the Night's Watch by killing John. And, you know, and I think just flat out saying some truths that, you know, I had no love for him. You know, that wasn't a secret.
No, but, he didn't lie. There was nothing he said in there that was a lie. It was all honest. It was all straightforward.
And,
yeah.
But I think just presenting that to the group and presenting it so well and kind of, twisting it to his advantage. But actually, I think he does believe all that. I think he believes everything he said.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I just thought that was a great speech, and I was actually surprised at that there was as much uproar as there was that when he admitted that he killed John. You know, so there's a few more John supporters than the small room.
Yeah, than the four people in there. Well, but I did like the way that they did do this in the show by having them outraged at the beginning, and then after hearing Alistair Thorne, just kind of go, well, okay, yeah, he's got a point. You know,
yeah. And they're all followers. They're just going to, I mean, what, John's dead. What can they really do?
Yeah. I mean, again, let's remember who the people at Castle Black are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a while.
Rapers
and murderers and deserters and whatever else, you know, they are the worst elements of society for the most part. I loved it. I thought that was great as well. And I loved it when he calls out Davos. He's like, look, you can go south. You can be a free man. The Red Woman, keep her, take her. We don't care. Do whatever you want to do. And Davos's reaction was perfect. I need mutton. Now I'm going to be hungry. I need some mutton. You know, he's like, I'm just going to play along with this. I'll make you believe that I'm just going to go. Yeah, I'm not much of a hunter. A hunter for mutton. Really? You need to be a hunter for sheep? I don't think that's... But I liked it. I liked the way that was sort of his way of, you know, putting up a bit of a smoke screen in terms of what his real intentions are, which is,
sure.
Well, I mean, let's face it. I think his real intentions are, look, the Red Woman can bring him back. I know she can. We can bring Jon Snow back. And God, I really did love his whole reactions with the guys up in that room. He's like, well, you guys haven't seen what I've seen of her, her capabilities. And lest we not forget, he was there for the birth of the shadow baby. So
yes,
he has seen more of Melisandre than I think he ever wanted to see.
Well, what do you mean? I don't know that she's a beautiful woman.
Well, we'll talk about that and shortly, I'm sure as well. Yes, she can be a beautiful woman. I think many, how did I hear this today? A buddy of mine at work put it very well. And we're talking here about the end scene now with Melisandre. Not talking about it yet. We'll get to that in a moment. But he referred to it as the most confused boner he's ever had.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, yeah. Oh, no, 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 my God, no. You know, there's... Which I think that was a very confusing moment for many men across the country, I believe, and across around the world. the pan down that was heard across the world. That's great. So my number three movie, do you have anything? I'm sorry. Do you have anything else to say about Alistair Thorne's speech?
No, just that I really enjoyed it. And he makes such a great antagonist. And
he does. I like that actor a lot. I forget
his name. It was great.
Well, my number three, going over to the other side of the world, Danny and Cal Morrow.
Mm.
Actually, I really enjoyed that entire scene with this new Khalasar. And I thought, I appreciated the fact that they gave... I'll have a couple quibbles here as well. But I like that they sort of... They didn't just make these characters... Like, I'm talking about the two buffoons that are there with them, as well as Cal Morrow. And then you got the two women throwing shade at Danny the whole time. I really like that they kind of gave them more of a characterization than you normally would get for some kind of side characters, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were funny.
Yeah, the humor. Yeah,
there was some humor. Now, I will say, Cal Morrow, a bit of a weak call if you're willing to allow your subordinates there to speak out of turn when you're trying to make a big proclamation about one of the most wonderful things. He's no Khal Drogo. He is no Khal Drogo, because Khal Drogo would have ripped those dudes' throats out, right? For saying, for questioning what is greatest in the world of you know. And that
but,
really,
I mean, but it was so funny, you know. Okay, you know, it's one of the top five.
Top five, exactly. And this had such a Conan the Barbarian feel. I mean, one of my favorite lines from that movie, the original Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger, is, "Conan, what are the three greatest things in life? To crush your enemies, to see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentations of the women." So those are your top three, and then rounding out the five would be, I guess, a naked woman. Seeing a naked woman for the first time. That just cracked me up. I love that when they were talking. I love that whole thing where Dany was not allowing them to know she could speak Dothraki, right?
Yeah.
And they're sitting there going on about...
That would be so hard.
Oh, it would be. Especially with the shit they were saying, right? But I loved it when the one guy was like, you know, but I want to be able to talk to her afterwards. I'm like, you're no Dothraki. There's no Dothraki that wants to talk to his woman afterwards. Are you kidding me? But I thought that was cute. I thought it was adorable. I love those guys questioning whether or not she has white pussy hair. That was funny.
Yeah,
that was funny. All of that was really quite funny. It was very endearing in a weird way. And then, of course, in a very weird way. And I love the fact that Khal Morra, the moment she, you know, first she says who she is with all the titles. She's like, I don't care. You're nothing. You're my slave. I was married to Khal Drogo.
I'm going
to
bed you tonight, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Then when she says I was married to Khal Drogo and I burned his body, like everybody's demeanor changes. But now we have this new situation where, oh, she has to go to Vyas Dothrak with all the widows.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like... the role for Dany.
Really boring.
Doesn't that sounds terrible? It's like, wait, no. You don't. She's mother of dragons.
Your final days.
Yeah,
a lot of final days left.
No kidding, man. So,
of course, the majority of the widows probably are very young.
Very true. So, what were your thoughts on this whole scene? What did you think about it?
Yeah, that was actually in my notes. I really enjoyed, you know, I called it the Dothraki humor and the whole debate if, you know, whether a woman for the first time, you know, should rank above, you know, qualify in the collective top five there. But yeah, it was funny. I enjoyed it. I like seeing Dany a mess again for a change. And I just like seeing it kind of come full circle.
Yeah,
this is back to where we were in season one. She's back with the Dothraki, not her own people.
And really, Khal Morra. I don't know. He really is no Khal Drogo. You see Khal Drogo, and you're even watching him on TV, and you're filled with a sense of like, oh, dude, he could just snap your spine at any time. You know, Khal Morra is kind of like,
that's not really what I'm thinking when I watch it. But
all right,
you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Understood, but. Khal Morra, yeah, you didn't quite get that same sort. His beard was nowhere as long as Khal Drogo's was, but
his
ponytail, yeah,
won as many fights or whatever.
But the other two dudes, they were funnier than hell. I mean, really, yeah. Khal Drogo would have killed them really quickly, but I like that they gave them some personality and they weren't just these bland, you know, just Dothraki dudes.
Right, sure. They were memorable.
They were memorable. Like so that was fun. I really enjoyed it. So I don't know. That's my number three. What is your number two?
Okay, my number two, because we got to talk about it. Bran to the rescue.
Oh, you just took my number one. Oh. Absolutely.
I just love seeing it. And I was like, really? I was like, what are they going to do? What do you mean? That I really didn't expect the Hounds to find Sansa. Theon was going to sacrifice himself and Sansa was going to get away somehow and not freeze. I didn't know how exactly that was going to happen. But to see Brienne and Podrick come to the rescue was just, I mean, we needed a hero.
Yeah, yeah.
she's like the only good person.
That entire scene.
Heroic person.
No, everything. Left. Everything with Sansa and Theon leading up to that, mm-hmm. by far my favorite part of this episode. It really, really was. And yeah, having Brienne show up to the rescue was just blissful. I got so happy seeing that. And then, my God, Brienne took out how many dudes? Jesus Christ.
Like six or something?
Something like that. And even Pod, he held his own. He was doing well. And then Theon comes and saves them. So great. Absolutely loved
it. That was great. Yep.
And just to back up for one quick moment, what about that scene after they came out of the river between Sansa and Theon, where he was just holding her, trying to get her warm? It was such a very humanizing moment for him again, mm-hmm. and for both of them. I mean, again, going back, think back to season one or season two, they're like siblings.
Sure.
You know, that's like her stepbrother. And it's been, and finally, you know, last season he did admit to her that, you know, he did not kill Bran and Rickon. So it's been very nice to see the reconciliation, I guess, between those two, and also mm-hmm. the rehabilitation of Theon Greyjoy.
Yeah.
No longer Reek. Because I won't see him as Reek anymore. Now he is Theon, you know. And there was that great line that one of Ramsay's men says, is, I can't wait to see what part of you Ramsay cuts off next. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, God, you poor son of a bitch.
There's not much left.
No, there's not much left. But he did come and he did, you know, he used a sword again. He put his hands on steel. And that was something Reek could not do, but Theon could. But Brienne showing up. Saving the
day.
That
was a moment.
And, swearing her loyalty to her again.
Yes.
Fealty to Sansa. Exactly. And then Sansa accepting it finally. It's like, mm-hmm. God damn, thank you. Accept this woman's loyalty because she is amazing.
I just love how she couldn't quite remember the words and Pod prompted her. And,
yeah.
And,
meet and meet at the
not
table.
Not an unkind way, but just just helping her out, you know. It was very touching.
Yeah, I got to admit, that's the one part of this episode I teared up on. It was this scene. And part of it was not just, okay, Brienne laying down her sword, doing that. But then there's that slight pause as Sansa turns to Theon. And Theon gives her a nod as though he's her advisor now.
Well, that was the one part I was kind of like, really? Does she have to look to a man?
I didn't see it as that. I saw it just very much I didn't see it turning him as a man. I saw it turning to him as, can I trust anybody? Should I trust her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that
this is the only other person there that she's sort of trusting. I can see
exactly.
That,
and and you're asking that of somebody who has almost no reason to trust anybody anymore.
Sure.
And he still gives the nod. So I wouldn't look at it as having to turn to a man. I would say look at it as somebody turning to her stepbrother that she's finally reconciling with and saying, can I trust this person? And, you know, look, she and Pod just saved their bacon, and Theon helped in that as well. Sansa did dick. Mm-hmm. She stood there going, yeah, you know, so I don't know. He's redeeming himself in whatever way. You know, I'm not saying what he did was anything has been good, you know, but at the same time, he's trying at this point, you know,
and
I love that scene though. And Brienne Lane, but again, my favorite moment of this and where I did get a little teared up, the look on Brienne's face when Sansa accepted.
Mm-hmm.
That
she's been waiting
for
it for so long.
She's been
yes.
waiting so long. She has needed something to keep her going. And she hasn't had anything to keep her going in so long, you know. And she's failed at every turn. She failed to failed Lady Stark. She failed with Arya. She failed once with Sansa, and she was able to make good on it now. And I'm so happy for her.
Me too.
So happy for her. So,
and I'm excited about her storyline too, Brienne. I hope it continues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well. My number two, Melisandre.
Okay. Well, we had ours flip-flop, so.
Okay, fair enough. Really, the Brienne thing was my favorite thing, which is why it was my number one. But Melisandre,
sure.
Of course, everybody's talking about this, right? This is the thing.
Right.
Similar to so many other things, sometimes when you end with something that huge, the rest of an episode gets buried. Because that was pretty huge. For the confused boner, as I already mentioned before, but also, what do you think's going on with her? I mean, not the very end scene. Let's back it up. When she first sees Jon Snow, And she talks about seeing the visions. Did you see that as her saying, no, 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 he's still going to come back. I see visions. Or
no, I think she is in a period of self-doubt.
Okay.
She's questioning herself and her abilities. And, you know, that's what she was saying. She was in disbelief. But I saw him in the flames fighting.
The parapets of Winterfell.
Yeah. And so, and she couldn't. Yeah. So she, I think she was in shock, and she's like probably at her lowest low right now because, you know, there have been a lot of decisions she's made, and it's resulted in a lot of deaths. And if she's doing this all for naught, you know, what is her purpose? She's totally lost her sense of purpose, like we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're just seeing her at a moment of, you know, insane vulnerability. And, you know, that's the first time we haven't seen her completely confident of her abilities, I think.
Yeah, very true. That's, yeah, very, very much so. Here's another continuity issue. We have seen her without the necklace before when she was in the bathtub at one point. Again, just a nitpick. But that final scene, it was kind of funny. It starts up. She's looking at herself in the mirror. She disrobes. And I literally turn to Mrs. Blog at home and I'm saying, I think it's in her contract that every episode, if she's in it, she has to get naked. I think that something about that. She likes to get naked. And then I was definitely blown away when she removes that necklace. Now, I loved that they finally got this detail in there that the necklace glows very bright red. And it was interesting to see it go out. And then what we saw.
Right.
Now.
Her true self.
I guess rumor has it, or what's floating around. And, you know, it was hinted at in the book. And there have been some. She's talked about it. And I guess Benioff and Weiss have talked about this as well. Is that she's maybe about 400 years old. I think it's the age.
They didn't want to nail it down. It was like.
No, but this is something
a couple
that I
hundred
guess
or something.
Therese Van Houten said to somebody earlier on in the series, said, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be about 400 years old, and that got spread around. So she's very, very old. Now, do you think, is this like what she does every night before she goes to sleep? Is this because she feels like she's giving up? Does she need to recharge her powers in order to bring Jon Snow back in some way? I mean, what are you thinking this whole scene meant?
I didn't really know how to interpret it at the time, but I don't know. The more I mull over it, I'm like, well, maybe this is just her every night. But I don't know. I don't think it's her giving up. Maybe giving it up for the night, but I don't think giving it up, turning it. I kind of got the sense
that she hasn't seen her natural self in a while. The way that she was looking at herself, it gave me a sense of like, oh, she hasn't seen how old she really is in a while.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't think any of us know until we get some more information. But it was certainly a jarring and surprising scene, to say the least.
It was. Yeah. No, it was. And, you know, what I left with was like, where can I get one of those necklaces?
So, I mean, yeah, obviously this is a glamour that she puts on, that she is young and beautiful when in fact she is a crone. I was really like, no, please don't pan down. Please don't. Oh, geez. Okay.
Now that was a real person's body.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah. It was an 80-year-old woman body double.
No, oh, interesting.
I don't know the actress's name that plays Melisandre, but
Carice Van Houten.
She had a lot, you know, the prosthetic makeup, but then had a body double.
Interesting. Okay. Well, no offense to the 80-year-old woman. I won't want to see myself at 80. I don't think I want. I won't want to gaze on that in a mirror. I'll be like, Jiminy Christmas. It was interesting. That was definitely very interesting. Did not expect it, especially. So here's what I found interesting was that the episode was titled The Red Woman. Yet I felt we got so little of the Red Woman.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so but as
I think
it was,
maybe it speaks of what's to come, I hope.
Well, I think it points to you as to what is significant, what is important. Mm-hmm. I also found it interesting in a sense that, oh, the Red Woman gave me a sense of the title of The Red Wedding, even though it has nothing to do with it. But it was sort of like, well, what's going on with all the red stuff? And of course, just the presence of R'hllor with her, of course, also was repeated a bit in Meereen when Tyrion and Varys were having their little walkabout as beggars or poor people, that they hear the Red Priest there as well. So R'hllor is still very much a big part of the story.
Yes.
That's not done. Stannis may be dead, but this is not done. So,
yep. Ooh, agreed.
What's going to happen? Well, your number one was Melisandre. My number one was Brienne and Sansa. Do you have any notes on this? Anything we missed that we want to chat about?
I think my only note that we haven't talked about is just Miranda and the whole Ramsay Miranda scene. And the Roose and Ramsay scene. We haven't talked about that at all. I found it amusing, or I enjoyed his sort of eulogy to her, or whatever it was. But then at the end, just, you know, feed her to the dogs. And as callous as that may be,
oh, you know, God, it kind of, yeah, maybe it was,
you know, why should the dogs have to go hungry?
Okay, fair enough. But that was still pretty harsh. That was pretty brutal.
That was harsh, but, you know, this is the North, you know, not a lot of food there coming up. But, you know, everybody's starving, probably. But, I don't know. I enjoyed that. I want to see what's to come with Ramsay, and God, I want him dead so bad.
And what about that line of Roose? Does this feel like a victory? That was pretty. Nice.
And I just like basically the threat. Or you know, he's saying you played your games with Sansa. You played your games with Theon, and look what's happened. And I just liked the threat of, you know, that maybe Lady Walda's carrying a boy.
Kind of, yeah, that was like, a good one.
Ramsay's on, you know, kind of shaky ground, and he's always been on shaky ground. And for him to, you know, play his games and not be wise, you know, it's going to have, it could potentially have some repercussions. And
he screwed up.
His head, you know, yes, big time screwed up.
Yeah. So well,
that's the only thing really.
Well, I've got a few items here on my notes. Okay. Just a couple items that we didn't bring up, but they're on the show. Of course, as I mentioned, Tyrion and Varys. I found that to be a bit of a weird scene. I mean, it was just kind of like, yes, let's remind us that Tyrion is there, Varys is there. Tyrion is making, you know, Varys gives him shit for walking like a rich person. He has to remind him he has no penis. So you get that relationship is back, you know, like the two of them can snipe at each other back and forth. The weird thing with the woman and, oh, she thinks you want to eat her baby. I'm like, good God.
Well, because Tyrion has his low Valyrian really sucks. That's why.
Yeah, it sucks. But also, I have a feeling she's probably frightened because, like, oh, my God, why is this dwarf even talking to me? What's going on? But then, of course, they burn the fleet. So right. the marine fleet, is everything there, not fleet necessarily, but the entire harbor, every ship out there. So they're stuck there. I think that entire scene was to show us they're not getting back to Westeros anytime soon. Except by dragon, eventually. But they are stuck there.
And part of me is going, no, I can't stand Meereen. Part of me can't stand
I know. And, of course, then you get the whole thing with the people beginning to kind of turn on Dany as well. But then you get the Red Priest, which is like, no, she left. But that's dragons. They're good. Go, you know, let's do it in her name. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in Meereen, but I don't know what to make of that yet. Jamie and Cersei. I was rather impressed that Cersei
did not blame Jamie. I cannot believe it.
Did not blame Jamie. That was interesting.
Do you think it was her walk of shame there?
It could have been.
5K she did.
I think it's that prophecy. I think she is really terrified of that prophecy, and everything is coming true as far as she's concerned. It is a little disconcerting. Jamie's like, no, we're the only two that matter. It's like, come on, guys, enough of this. Nothing good happens with the two of you. Jaime, go find Brienne. You guys are good together. You and Cersei, yeah, not so much. But that was interesting. The Sparrow, and you know, so we get a little bit of Margaery.
Yeah, Margaery.
And mm-hmm. I think the Margaery thing was just, again, similar to the Tyrion Varys thing.
Touch base, kind of.
Touch base. Yeah. She's still in prison. Cersei's out. She did her walk of shame, but Margaery will still not say her brother is gay. So therefore, she's going to be stuck there. And the Septa. Well, confess.
I'd love
confess.
To see the resurrected mountain again.
Yeah, yeah. We saw some of
that looked good. And I love how his eyes are so purple and his face is so purple and dead behind those.
Yeah. Oh, they haven't given him the name of Robert Strong, have they? I don't think so. That's a book thing.
I don't know if they did. Okay, I don't know if they did last season, but I don't know. I like seeing him again. That was pretty cool.
It was funny, too, that he, like, on the beach when she goes to run to greet the dinghy, the boat showing up, he's just standing there. Just silent, giant.
Purple face.
Yeah. Actually, that actor, he just did a hilarious commercial that I just saw. I don't know if it was a recent commercial. It popped up on Reddit or something.
Who's the actor these days? There's been like three.
There's been three, but the most recent one is Thor something or other. He's the second strongest man in the world. And strongest. He does this thing where he talks about how he got so big by weightlifting these plastic bottles of water in different weight sizes. But then at the end of it, it's like, no, that is ridiculous. Plastic is wasteful. I would never go with plastic. You know, so it's actually an environmental thing. It's a really funny ad. I'd suggest checking it out.
I haven't seen that.
And then finally, the one thing I'd bring up, Jorah and Dario may be the greatest investigators of all time because they travel to an unknown land, manage to find one burned goat, a ring of dirt, and a ring in the middle of how the hell do they even know where to go? And they suddenly find a ring.
Well, or they were following, you know, the horse tracks. There were the horse tracks and, you know.
No, but she flew there by dragon. She flew there by dragon.
They got to that island or whatever it was, but.
Well, it's through the waste. I mean,
they're there.
This falls under the Department of Suspension of Disbelief, yes, because I'm seriously thinking, how the fuck did they find that?
They have some Daryl Dixon tracking skills.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. So somehow they can find track a flying dragon. I got to call bullshit on that, but I still loved it. It was great. I do love that Jorah is still checking on his progression of grayscale, which is progressing.
It is.
And Dario, you know, still sexy. So what are you going to do?
He is.
Wow. Well, do you have anything else you want to bring up about this episode? I spit out a bunch of notes on there. Do you have anything else to add?
I'm glad you did because I'd forgotten about a couple of things.
Cool.
Nope, well, that's all I have to say.
I think we covered most of this episode. I really did enjoy it. Again, those highlights for me, Brienne and Sansa. The whole Melisandre thing I thought was just really great. I good episode. And, you know, as with all season premieres of Game of Thrones, it's a slow boil. You know, this is not, you brought up The Walking Dead. It is not like The Walking Dead where they're going to have to, a big event's going to happen in the season premiere. Whoa, they spent a lot of money on that. You know, Game of Thrones tends to spend its money in the latter portion of the season where it is a bit of a chess game at the beginning. I was surprised to get such activities as that coup that happened right away. That was a lot of violence for season one, you know, or episode one. So, and now, you know, the elephant in the room here. We're out of territory in the book. You know, we have a few things that we could talk about that we know about with the Arya storyline or little bits and pieces here and there that the book is still not caught up with the book. But overall, how did you feel about it? We finally get to be spectators.
I am so excited.
It's so really much more fun, isn't it?
Just to watch and not know.
It's more fun.
Really, by this point, I didn't do any brushing up on the books or anything. So I really have forgotten most everything that probably is going to be touched on that still is in the book. So yeah, I'm really excited to, you know, kind of view this with fresh eyes and go into it without knowing much.
I find it liberating. I really do. It's a little more fun for me. And I'm like, yeah, ooh. You know, you go through a bunch of different emotions, and it's kind of cool because I have no clue what's going to happen. And I'm excited for that. So the unknown is awakened in me, and I think it's great. I don't know what the hell's going to happen with just about anybody right now. It's a good feeling. That's a good feeling. And I'm really happy it's back. So welcome back, Game of Thrones. Welcome back, Throners. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. So what do you say we go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll come back with some news about Game of Thrones?
Okay, let's do.
Okay, we're back, and it is time to chat about some news that has happened over this week about Game of Thrones. Grace, why don't you go ahead and spill the beans?
Okay. Well, I think the biggest thing, and we probably will not be surprised about this, but Game of Thrones was renewed for season 7. So we have at least one more season, but probably two.
Yeah.
But reports are saying that the upcoming season of Game of Thrones might be shorter than the usual 10 episodes that we're kind of used to. The rumor is that it's going to be in season 7, 7 episodes, and then season 8, 6 episodes maybe. So we'll see. I don't know if I like that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of interesting that there will be only 13 episodes after the season.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting close. Yeah.
I didn't realize we were that close to the end, I must say.
And I got to say, one thing that's interesting is how little news we had this week about anything Game of Thrones related. And I think a big piece of that has to do with how much tighter they're being with, you know, if you recall last season, the first 4 episodes were leaked early on. So there was a flurry of information coming out. But I think HBO's gotten a little tighter on all that.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something I noticed. That it was hard to find. I mean,
we couldn't even find a preview for next week. I mean, not a preview, but they didn't even
give you a synopsis of next week. We have the trailer to go on, and that gives us a little bit. And I saw little bits here and there, but yeah, very very little information. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and do you want to do the next one?
Oh sure, why the hell not? I thought this was the cutest thing in the world, Maisie Williams. Last night, Sunday night, the season premiere, tweeted out, or I don't know, a tweeter. I think it was on Instagram, maybe on Twitter, but she basically asked people, "Hey, who's having any viewing parties in the around UCLA?" And a couple people responded, and she crashed their party.
That's
so
awesome.
Maisie Williams, and here's the best part: she brought snacks, and she took pictures on Instagram. She actually laid this all out about her showing up to this thing, and she's been showing up all over the place. We just had her show up at a GameStop pretending to be a worker there, and people were like, "Wait, you're from Game of Thrones?" No, my name's she gave a fake name. They brought up the action figure. "No, this is you." "No, that's not me." She's kind of all over the
place. With her little English accent.
With her English accent, her thick eyebrows, and her cute little glasses. I kind of love the fact that she's embracing this, and she's having some fun with it. And how cool would it be if you're a college student to be having a Game of Thrones party with your friends.
I can't even imagine, no.
Oh, and they had some great like Game of Thrones-themed snacks already there. And it's just the cutest thing in the world. And I love that.
Great.
I thought that was a wonderful news item to include in this one. Maisie Williams, Arya, by the way, if you don't know. Just adorable. That girl is just the cutest thing in the world. So I love that. I thought that was remarkable. She's having fun with this. Man, really, come up to San Francisco. I'll pretend I'm having a viewing party. You know, we can hang out. Really, really cool. I really enjoyed that. So I think that wraps up the news, and just in time, because look, over there, ravens. All right, so we have we didn't get any phone calls, but we do have a few emails and some Facebook comments. Grace, why don't you go ahead and take this first one?
Okay, our first one is from Kay Deer. After the 601 reveal of Melisandre's true identity, we can finally lay all other theories to rest. Melisandre equals E.T. Melisandre sheds her disguise and emerges as her true extraterrestrial self in order to save Jon Snow. Using her glowing red finger, she whispers, "Ouch." As she presses it against Jon's chest. At first, it seems as though she was too late. But just as she was about to give up, Jon Snow's chest starts to glow the same color red as Melisandre's phallic fingertip.
Ouch.
Jon whispers back,
"Ouch."
Melisandre grows weak, and she knows it's time for her to return home. A spaceship descends from the sky, coming to rest just outside the wall. Melisandre kisses Jon on the cheek. She will miss him, despite the lack of sexual reciprocation. No matter how hard she tried to seduce him, she never got farther than just the tip. The glowing red phallic fingertip. Ouch. The faceless no one, formerly known as Kay Deer from Seattle. That was pretty awesome.
Okay. Oh, thanks, you Kay. So much. That is just the tip. That is so funny. Tip. Oh, thank you so much. That I love that. That's great. Okay, our next one is from Audrey Srod. And by the way, my apologies to everybody. I will slaughter your name. I'm just getting that out there right off the bat. A little
one of
under
our specialties.
It really is one of my specialties. This is true. A little underwhelmed, but glad the show is finally back. Just when I thought poor Sansa had the shittiest luck, Brienne finally came and she was glorious. Brienne was my favorite part, and I'm excited to see what happens next week with Davos and the Night's Watch. Khaleesi, thousands of miles back with the Dothraki. Drag, drag, drag.
Okay. Evan Brookman says, "My eyes are burning. Never take off your big necklace thingy. I want the illusion back."
Michael Harding.
I just want the necklace.
Yeah. Oh, wishful thinking. Michael Harding. "Well, I thought it was a decent episode. They almost did one thing right when they started killing people in Dorne, but they should have killed them all off and rid us of this plot line."
Oh, I'm with you, Michael.
Yeah, we all are.
Alicia says, I'm not even going to try to do the last name. "It was like we never had to wait 9 months between seasons. Picked up right where we left off, and it was so worth the wait. I loved it. I know John is dead, but they never showed a funeral or burning on the pyre. Therefore, I refuse to believe he is gone. Finally, after 5 years, some good luck for Sansa. Yay, Brienne! I noticed when Melisandre took her necklace off, the light went out in the jewel. Surprise! Apparently, she is centuries old. Yikes. A whole new meaning to the word old bag."
Ew.
"Overall, I thought it was a great episode and cannot wait for next week. Going to be an epic sixth season."
I agree. I'm...
Mm-hmm.
I do. I totally agree. I loved everything you just said there. Thank you very much. Next one is from Kristen Hallberg. "We waited the length of a full pregnancy to have zero answers. Seriously, this episode could have been a mid-year trailer for advertisement. So there was a murder in Dorne. Who the crap cares? No movement in anything. I will say the scene with Sansa and Brienne was extremely satisfying. I did have a teary moment there. But that was it. Next week, better bring it." I disagree with that. I thought there was a lot of movement forward, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And
And much like in real life, a full pregnancy is not always 9 months. Y'all sometimes have an extra week or so.
Yeah, well, this is true.
I know from experience. So if we waited 9 months, we can wait an extra week or so.
No, but I mean, I thought we'd, I mean, zero answers. I mean, what were you necessarily? Jon Snow is dead. I mean, that's an answer.
Yeah,
for
that
you.
Was an answer.
That's an absolute answer. He is dead. As to whether or not he'll be resurrected, that's a storyline. But it's, I thought we got a lot in this one. So,
yeah. But it was fun to hear the other side.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's this, seriously, Game of Thrones always starts off slow.
It does. It always starts. I agree.
So I don't know what you're expecting on that one, but you know, it's the way it goes.
Okay. Laura Willie Swink says, unlike The Walking Dead, Thrones usually doesn't start off with a bang.
That's what I was just saying. Usually,
the premiere is usually follow up and build up. So I wasn't expecting something mind blowing. I was just so psyched that it was back. I did love that all the badasses last night seemed to be the ladies, from Brienne to the Sand Snakes to Daenerys.
Yeah.
The minute Trystane turned his back to Obara, I knew that he was a goner. And I was actually surprised that Cersei didn't blame Jaime for Marisol's death and actually took some of the blame herself.
Yeah.
Has she maybe learned some humility from her walk of shame? Yeah, I was thinking maybe. The same thing.
Well, thank you, Laura. I really love that moment where Cersei talked about Marcella and how, you know, the idea that she was so good. And if she could produce something that good, then maybe that she wasn't that bad. You know, it was.
Yeah.
Lena Headey. She kills it.
Yeah. She owns that role.
No, she really, really does. Because, I mean, it's a different character than the Cersei from the book.
Sure.
And I am so okay with that. It's not even funny, you know, because
really I was not, I have to say, I was not in the beginning at all. I was not, but, you know, and maybe it is Lena Headey, but, you know,
I think it is Lena Headey because she really, I don't know. There's something about when you see an actor who is really committed to their role and really giving something extra, she's a great actress and a great actor. I really feel that with her and I don't know. Similar, I got to say, to Gwendolyn Christie with Brienne.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the TV show Brienne even more than the book Brienne. And I love the book Brienne.
I agree. Yeah.
But as an actor, she is spectacular. Yeah. You know, she is so good.
It was made for her.
It really is. And like when she was doing that fighting with everybody, like, I believe she is really killing and fighting those dudes. You know, the way she grunts, like, I mean, just, I mean, she is just all she is powerful. And she, I mean, here's another Star Wars thing, you know, Captain Phasma, she's now in the Star Wars universe. I love that. She had more to do in this, of course, than she did in the whole movie, but, I love her. So yeah, I love that the ladies really got to shine in this episode, which I thought was fantastic. And, yeah, thank you very much, Laura. And thank you all for writing in. Many of these comments, of course, came from our Facebook page. Definitely find us on Facebook, Game of Microphones. We are there. And we didn't get as many emails as we thought we would and no phone calls, but that is always an option as well. So, Grace, now this is going to be the section that is about as anemic as it gets. Because we have no information about next time on Game of Thrones.
Well, we do know that season 6, episode 2 is going to be titled Home.
Yes. Okay, we know the title. Now, we can talk about the the brief little trailer, the preview for next week. We will see Bran.
Yes, and we've been waiting a whole season for that.
Yes, we have. Now, I believe that they've changed the actor for the Green Seer. The dude who's under the roots there.
Really?
Well,
will we notice? He was so old anyway.
Well, you should notice because the person they got is substantially more significant than the previous actor. It's Max von Sydow. Will now be the Green. You know. Well, he was in The Force Awakens. He was the old guy at the very beginning. They gave Poe Dameron he gets the first line in The Force Awakens when he says, this should start to set things right. He's the guy that gives the map to Poe, and then he's swiftly killed by Kylo Ren. This is the Exorcist, is Max von Sydow.
Oh, wow.
I mean, no. Max von Sydow is huge. We're talking Ming the Merciless.
So he won't last long?
No, well, we don't know. I don't know, but he's a big actor in this role. again, seriously, even as a book reader, I don't know. We don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen with the Bran storyline. So
it was a joke, like a Ned Stark.
I know. The bigger the actor, the bigger. Mark Addy, huge actor, boom, mm-hmm, dead. Mm-hmm. It happens. I get this. So we're going to see Bran. I've got a little bit of a little. Maybe we should have said this at the beginning. If you don't want to know about what's going to happen next week, the spoilers, so you might want to skip ahead. But I don't think we're giving too much away because we don't know squat. But what we do know, one other thing, Balon Greyjoy will be back.
Yeah.
Next episode. So we're getting some more. I know you don't like the Greyjoys. I'm a fan of the Greyjoys. I love me some Viking action. So I dig the Greyjoys. I want to see more of them.
I hope they do a good job of it.
I hope so, too. Of course, we hope they do a good job with it. Yeah. Nobody's going to sit there and go, God, I hope they really fuck it up. That'd be great if they completely fuck it up.
But I was trying to be positive. That was me being positive.
That's you being positive. That's some weak sauce right there. That's mean. I'm sorry. That was wonderfully, wonderfully positive. It is your birthday. I should be a little nicer. By the way, everybody, it's Grace's birthday today, and she's doing a fucking podcast. Kudos to you. I saved it to the end. Nobody will even hear this.
No one listens to this part.
That's all we just know kidding. About next episode. We don't know anything about it.
It's going to be a big surprise.
It will be a big surprise.
They need to step up the plot summaries for the upcoming episodes, or we're going to have to cut out this section.
Yeah, seriously.
We're going to start making up our own.
We looked on HBO's website. We looked on IMDb. We looked everywhere for any kind of information about the next episode. But this goes hand in hand with what I was saying earlier. I think HBO is being a hell of a lot tighter on all their information. They're not letting this shit out. So, and I feel that probably has to do because we are in uncharted territory. This is not connected with the books. So
maybe
we just, nobody knows. So they can be a little tighter and, speculation is now just speculation.
Yep. Very good. Well,
there's some good speculation because I do love the Greyjoys and there's some cool shit that comes with that. I mean, we're talking robotic arms and shit. I'm serious.
Are you going to have your wine horn next week?
So anybody who subscribes to Loot Crate, last week, you would have received, in my opinion, what was probably one of the worst Loot Crates that ever came in. First of all, a very weird shirt that showed up with a Labyrinth, you know, David Bowie's movie Labyrinth. Uh-huh. A Labyrinth t-shirt, which strangely enough was in purple on the day that Prince died. Mm. Prince dies. I get home from work and I open up my Loot Crate and here's a shirt with David Bowie on it in purple.
Wow.
Honestly, I found that odd. I found it weird.
It is odd.
It was a little creepy to me. But within the Loot Crate was a promotion from the show Vikings. And it's a drinking horn, a wine horn. I'm probably an ale horn, but I took it as a wine horn because I drink wine. And Saturday night, a couple nights ago, I decided to try out my wine horn at home.
And you had it hanging around
your neck. That's right. It's got a leather strap to hang around your neck, and it does conform perfectly around my belly. It was wonderful. I drank many horns full of wine. It was glorious. So yes, maybe next week I will drink for my wine horn.
I need one to put some ale in.
If there, yeah, your vodka, you can put some vodka in there. I think you're right. If there's some Greyjoy action next week, I will be sitting here with my wine horn.
Really,
I agree. All right, I got to figure out how many ounces that thing holds because
to better pace yourself.
Because boy, Saturday was an interesting night. Okay. A lot of wine flowed through that horn. That's all I'm saying.
Very good.
All right. Well, that does wrap up our next time on Game of Thrones, which is really remarkably shitty. We have no information to go off of. They're keeping tight on this stuff. But that's cool. Grace, do you have anything else you want to say about this episode, The Red Woman?
No, but it was a good one.
Indeed. So, what do you go ahead and say we close out the show?
Let's do it.
Okay. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY.
If you would like to write in, you can email us at game@podcastica.com. And we now have a dedicated Facebook page at facebook.com/GOM podcast. And we encourage you to check that out.
Oh, absolutely. That is where we will interact with you the most is on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So definitely go check that out. And also be sure to check out the other great podcasts in our growing network at podcastica.com. We are up to about 10 podcasts now.
Yeah.
We have a very eclectic mix of things. There's something on meditation. We have interviews with other podcasters, with podcast junkies. There's the Film School with Ron Dawson's sci-fi movie podcast, Once Upon a Podcast, Walking Dead cast, now The Fear of the Walking Dead cast. Of course, Under the Comic Covers, starring Grace and I, my favorite of all of them. and also, if you like what you've heard, by all means, please leave us a review or even a rating on iTunes. That would be much appreciated.
Okay, join us next week for Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 2, Home, with Mr. Blog and co-host Cindy.
Indeed. So we'll be joined next week with Cindy from Walker Stalker Con. But until then, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.